Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Well, the authorizers in the Ag Committee write the language. Us on the appropriation side, I sit on the Ag Appropriations, we fund the programs. Well, yes, they go hand in hand.
Farm bills need funding. David Valadeo from California sits on appropriations. G.T. Thompson chairs the House Ag Committee.
We are definitely all part of the American Agriculture Farm Team. I really like the fact how these last 2 years we've the Agriculture Committee members and the Agriculture Appropriators, how we work together. We made some really good, when it came to broadband, we sorted some things out, did great work. And I look forward to, building that teamwork across the Ag Committee and the Ag Appropriators in the next 2 years.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
USDA out with their World Ag Supply Demand Estimates report for the month of February. Starting with wheat, supply-demand outlook largely unchanged with some minor revisions to domestic use and ending stocks. Food use lowered 2 million bushels to 975 million, but still, it's a record. Decrease based on the flour millings products report, which indicated a 2% reduction in wheat ground for flour for the October through December quarter compared to a year earlier. Seed use raised 1 million bushels to 70 million based primarily on seed use data for the September through November quarter. Wheat exports also unchanged, 775 million tons, with offsetting by class changes. Projected ending stocks up 1 million bushels, now 568 million. Average farm price, 10 cents lower, $9 a bushel. So from wheat over to corn, and the outlook is for lower corn use for ethanol and larger ending stocks. Corn used for ethanol reduced 25 million bushels, according to USDA, and that's based on data through the Grain Crushings and Co-Products Production Report and weekly ethanol production data reported by the Energy Information Administration. So no other use changes, so U.S. corn ending stocks are up 25 million bushels from last month, but the season average corn price, no change, $6.70 per bushel. Now to the soybean outlook, and it's for lower soybean crush and higher ending stocks. Soybean crush forecast 2.23 billion bushels. It's down 15 million from last month on lower domestic soybean meal disappearance and a higher soybean meal extraction rate. With soybean exports unchanged, the ending stocks are forecast 225 million bushels. That's up 15 million. U.S. season average soybean price forecast $14.30 per bushel. That's a dime higher than last month. Meal price forecast $450 per short ton. That's up $25. While the soybean oil price forecast unchanged at 68 cents per pound. And to the cotton report from USDA, part of the World Ag Supply Demand Estimates, or WASDE report, the 22-23 U.S. cotton supply demand forecast shows slightly lower mill use, higher ending stocks relative to last month, while production and exports have remained unchanged. So the mill use forecast lowered 100,000 bales to 2.1 million on recent lower rates of monthly utilization. Upland cotton marketing year average price received by producers unchanged from the month before. That's 83 cents per pound. Now, world cotton ending stocks are 850,000 bales lower this month as expected output falls 1 million bales and consumption is projected 190,000 bales lower. India's crop down 1 million bales as a continued slow pace of market arrivals tempers the previous optimism. Also, looking at China's crop, it's up 500,000 bales on a record pace. Pakistan up 200,000 bales. And the world trade projected 1.3 million bales lower. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
For those of you that are producers in the room and you've invested in genetics and producing more high-quality animals, congratulations. Congratulations.
Randy Block is president and CEO of Cattle Facts at the Cattle Facts Outlook Seminar in New Orleans.
For those of you that are buying and feeding those animals through the production system, it's been good, hasn't it? These price spreads have been rewarding, especially here over the last few years. And you can see this pretty clearly in here on the chart that I've put up on the screen for you. Just look at the total of all grades. This would be basically a total enumeration of all the cattle that are merchandised throughout the course of the year. And what you see as you look at this data, there's the average of all grades is about $45 a head more than what our cash market averages on a weekly basis. And these are all annualized numbers you can see. If you look at cattle, it would be grading over 80% choice and prime. You're looking at a value appreciation there of about $65 a head. What if we took it over $90 a head? Again, if you've watched these spreads here over the course of the last quarter of the year, there's been cattle that have really hit the targets that have been 90% plus choice and prime animals that have been bringing $150 to $200 a head premiums. Those are the kind of market signals we need, aren't they? We need those type of market signals to know that whether we're doing the right things or not. And they're pretty clear. Well, look at the cattle on this chart that are less than 35% choice. Look at the discounts they're bringing. It makes sense, doesn't it? It makes sense why we're seeing these spreads in the value, because that really is the value of these animals with the hide off. So I would say our markets are alive and well. Price discovery, obviously, when we got our hook space and our supplies back in balance, these markets have worked pretty doggone well here over the last several months. I think they'll work pretty well here over the next several years going forward. These consumer market signals are really key to us. Kevin walked you through what we see in these demand signals. But I think if you go back and you look at what's happened and how we've responded as an industry, you look at these consumption figures and you look at that and say, wow, look at the poultry industry. Who's the lowest cost producer? Poultry. It shouldn't be any surprise to us in here that poultry has seen that kind of increase in market share. I remind you all back in the 80s when we thought, I say we, the cattle industry thought we could be number one in market share of consumption and number one in market share of spending. About broke us, didn't it? About broke us. And again, we didn't have good data to make good decisions as an industry in those days because we didn't know what the consumer was saying. Thank goodness we've had the checkoff that you all have invested in, that we can do the research and analysis, and we've got things like the quality audit, that we've got these benchmarks that tell us how we're doing. Those have been critical, critical things, and I don't believe our industry would have enjoyed the demand growth that we've experienced here over the last 15 to 20 years had we not had those programs that gave us the data. So I'd encourage you to continue to invest in your industry, and I think it will help us have a brighter future as we move down the road.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
It is something we are working on internally, but are having conversations with the Hill on. So I'm not going to put words in their mouth on what they may or may not be considering, but it's certainly something that we're working on and we're having conversations with them about.
Dr. Bart Fisher is co-director of the Ag and Food Policy Center at Texas A&M. Before was chief economist, House Ag Committee.
To me, I mean, the point I'm going to be making is I think that's eminently reasonable. You know, at the time, if you think through the progression, if you look at 14, it was Lent was completely out as a covered commodity. Stacks was all that was left. When we get to the Bipartisan Budget Act of 18, well, cotton is back in. We had tried cotton seed. That didn't work, and so I'm sitting in the office thinking, well, let's just put them both together. Seed cotton's now going to be the covered commodity. And we came up with a price series to do it and set the reference price. And so you have all of that at play, but at that point in time, the other side of folks who are advocating on the other side of the table said, well, now that cotton is a covered commodity, Stax was offered in lieu of being a covered commodity. Now that it is a covered commodity, Stax has to go away. That's what we were told. And so we fought that for several weeks. And one of the main arguments we made was the base acre argument, right? That not everybody has it. And then the compromise was, okay, we'll bring it back, but you cannot have both, right? And it's the only one. With SCO, I mean, and you can go buy SCO now and have PLC. And so part of our thinking is that if we do come up with a streamlined policy, some maybe, I mean, there's a lot of money in stacks for budget. And so some cotton growers may say, well, I don't want to give up. I mean, we already have a decent product. Let's not, mess with it. It's all downside. Well, where could there be some upside? There could be some upside in a compromise that says, okay, well, just like SCO, you can have anyone who gets this new area-wide coverage can also have PLC, where there's no choice to be made. And so it's not that Congress is advocating or that they're considering it now, but it's absolutely something, we're going to be visiting with them about. And I know at least on the House side, their staff, their commodity staff, are also from West Texas who understand these issues incredibly well. And it's something so if y'all know Trevor White from down at New Home, it's something he's talked about a lot as well, is just the need to tighten up on the top end, all these area coverages. And it's only gotten more complicated with the advent of ECO. And so, to me, I think there's a very real possibility there. I think it can make for a very robust safety net if done right.
But could we see the farm bill extended?
What I've heard the chairman say is he has every intention of getting it done, and so I sort of stick with it there. The point I've made is that if we're not going to get new money, though, what's the point of doing it? And so, I mean, I think it's entirely feasible that it could get done this year. Do I think it's going to get done by September? Absolutely not. If y'all think back to the expiration of the 08 bill, if you remember hearing about the dairy cliff in the press, what ended up happening, I mean, the world doesn't fall apart on September 30th. Why? Mainly because we work in crop years on the farm policy side, right? Crop year being the year that you harvest. And so plant cotton in the spring, harvest in the fall, all the same. Wheat, you plant one year, harvest the next year. It's the year of harvest that's the crop year. And so September 30th can come and go because the farm bill's already authorized PLC for that crop year. And so what ends up happening, though, you get to the end of the year, you start to get to January 1, policies like dairy that could trigger every single, we start to think about wheat, the marketing loan coming up in May or June. Dairy could trigger every single, could trigger every single day. And so that's why you heard about the dairy cliff on January 1. So typically, they can push it all the way to January without the world falling apart.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Glad to be with you and glad to be with my good friend, the gentleman from the 22nd Congressional District, a great ag district, David Valadao.
Thanks, John, for having me. Thank you, GT, for joining us on this.
Chairman of the House Ag Committee is GT Thompson from Pennsylvania, along with David Valadao, a representative from California.
Well, we're bringing a bipartisan delegation to the World Agriculture Expo in Tulare, California. We're going to be at the Heritage Complex Banquet Hall, and it's a Farm Bill listening session. So we've got that scheduled for next week. I considered it a Farm Bill Valentine's Day present. So we're going to do that on February 14th at 10 a.m. Pacific time. Really looking forward to being there and then spending some time with Congressman Valadao as we visit his district and specifically his family farm and the goal is to be able to listen and learn, right? I mean, every chairman wants a farm bill that's bipartisan, bicameral, on time and highly effective, and those are my goals. And I think we do that by doing this, by going out and bringing the voices of American agriculture back to the Farm Bill process. So real proud to be with David in his home state next week.
So what does the chairman hope to hear at this upcoming Farm Bill listening session in California?
I don't want to get too far ahead of where we need to be, and that's doing this listening session first, because my
you know, my goal going into this farm bill is it needs to reflect the needs of the American farmer. American farmer, rancher, forester, those in processing, those key stakeholders in rural America. I do believe, as you know, I've talked about this. With my family background and my congressional district, I kind of joke at the fact that my veins full of milk with sawdust in it. And, we need to do the audit. First, we need to conduct that thorough audit of what's working, what's not working, what needs fine-tuning. One of the things that I did with the jurisdiction of the subcommittees is really expressed and I think raised the profile of dairy, because what traditionally was known as the livestock committee, subcommittee, is now known as livestock, dairy, and poultry. And that makes a difference. It sends a message of just how important the dairy industry is. Obviously we need to be looking at the dairy margin coverage. Are there things that we can learn? I think that program's working fairly well, but everything is open to, in this reauthorization to tweaks. How can we make it better? What are some opportunities? And then just the whole milk pricing process, the federal milk marketing orders, something we have to have a discussion about. I don't know if it's necessary to do to accomplish whatever we come up with through the farm bill, because I'm pretty sure that the USDA does have the authority to have some hearings and to make some changes. But I know here's what I do know about dairy. We can't continue to do what we have been doing, because we're just losing dairy herds and dairy farm families at I think an alarming rate across the country.
And this is Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
For those of you young people in the room, this is for you. For those of us gray hairs in the room, we live through it.
Randy Block is president and CEO of Cattle Facts at the Cattle Facts Outlook Seminar in New Orleans.
If you look at this graph and you see demand that was cut in half from 1980 to 1998, I want you to see the destruction that took place in our industry as we went through that. We lost 400,000 producers. We had a total cattle inventory that dropped 16 million head. We had a beef cow herd that declined 5 million head. Beef consumption dropped 12 pounds and the market didn't respond. It dropped 12 pounds and the market didn't respond. If the beef consumption dropped 12 pounds now, our market would go up over $100 a hundredweight if we had the same demand that we've got today. That's what I'm talking about in here. These were devastating times. You look at the growth in beef demand that we've experienced in here, particularly over the last 15 years, it's been worth over $250 a head. Over $250 a head has been driven because of the demand growth and because we have an industry that is listening to the consumer. So I commend you all to continue to stay focused on what the consumer is telling us, what the data is telling us, what they're willing to pay for. Yes, we haven't won the battle when it comes to share of stomach, but we've definitely won the battle when it comes to share of pocketbook. Look at this data in front of you here. Again, you look at total spending growth. I want you to add what you see on that chart in there between pork and poultry, add them up. Broiler up 42 billion pounds, pork up 46 billion pounds. That's 88 billion pounds of growth or $88 billion growth in spending. Look at the beef industry where it is. $91 billion growth in spending on beef. We've got 28% of the share of consumption, and we've got over half of the increased share in spending. This is when you know that the demand growth has been significant. So this is what we really have to stay focused on. Are we getting the votes? Obviously, we're going to have some headwinds as we go forward in here because of the lack of supply. Again, this is not ideal to go through this big of a decline in supply that we're going to go through. Because what happens? We tend to price ourselves out of the market at some point, don't we? We tend to price ourselves out, and that's something we'll have to be really paying attention to as we get into 25, 26 in that time period. The export side is huge. We haven't spent a ton of time talking about it today, but I do think we need to hit on it, because if you look at this demand growth that we've experienced here, when we had the cow that stole Christmas in 2023, beef and beef byproduct exports, if we added the value of hides into it, that was worth $175 a head. Look what the total value is today. We finished 2022 at about $500 a head. 23% of the value of a fed animal today is generated out of that export market. So this is a major, major contribution to the overall industry. Remember, we only have 4% of the world's population here in the United States, between 3 and 4%. So we're going to have to continue to listen to that global consumer as well and make sure we're delivering what they're demanding on a daily basis as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Ryan LeGrand, president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council, took a look back at 2022 and said it was a great year for exports.
62 million tons of corn exported. Distillers grains were very near record high. You had Mexico taking a record amount of DDGS, well over 2 million tons. Pretty good year all in all. We had a very successful export exchange, and that's really the flagship event of the U.S. Grains Council. We'll bring in upwards of 300 international buyers from around 40 to 50 countries to just do business with the agribusiness members of the United States. There were $225 million of grain and co-product sales, so that was very, very successful event.
Another highlight from last year was opening their newest international office in India last September. He says the African continent is another target for more export opportunities for U.S. grain producers.
We work all over Africa. We work in North Africa and in Sub-Saharan Africa on both the east and the west sides, and they're very, very different markets, all three of them. Last year I was in Kenya and Tanzania seeing our programs where we're doing work that the council really got started doing in 1960, and that's trying to build our own demand from the ground up. We're doing animal extension work. We're teaching people better feed milling practices and hoping that we can create a market for ourselves in the future.
He says there are other promising markets for U.S.-produced ethanol, corn, sorghum, and other products.
Southeast Asia is really one that we're always watching and working hard in. We have some issues with corn competitiveness in there, but distillers grains has always really been a big-ticket item going into Southeast Asia. Ethanol is starting to expand a little bit in there. If you break it down by products, on the ethanol side, I'd say Canada is a very, very promising market. They've quickly turned into our top export market for ethanol. Corn side, we've had some problems with competitiveness this year. We're coming back into a pricing where we price into more rations and more markets around the world, but I'd say Mexico is just going to continue to be a steady customer.
He says China and Mexico also take in a lot of U.S. sorghum. Mexico also imports a lot of barley. There are a number of other markets that USGC is moving into with success.
We're looking to expand ethanol use in Japan. There was just zero ethanol going into that, zero U.S. ethanol going into that just a few short years ago. And we keep expanding our reach there and expanding exports there of ethanol to Japan in the form of FTBE. So that's one we'll be watching. We want to continue to develop these transship markets for ethanol that are happening in Singapore, ethanol going to various Southeast Asian nations after it gets shipped there. Korea is doing a lot of transshipping as well to Philippines and other nearby countries. So continuing to develop that transship market and just overall demand for ethanol will be a very key priority for us this year.
Chad Smith reports.
Thanks, Chad. David Valadeo is a representative from California's 22nd district.
My district is a very agriculturally rich district. And for the members who have never been to that part of California, I think they'll be shocked to see the amount of agriculture there, the variety of products grown. I mean, I think it'll be a really impressive situation for them. And the World Ag Expo is obviously the best place to do it. Last year, they had about 100,000 voters or 100,000 attendees in a three-day window. But in my area, we grow anywhere from 300 to 400 different types of commodities. And it's the largest dairy district in the nation. California is 20% of the nation's milk. Not far from there, we're growing everything from citrus to grapes to garlic. We've got some beef, poultry, even some pork. So it's a very diverse area. We're lucky with our weather. We can grow just about anything. And having the listening session there with the chairman is a huge honor for myself, but especially for my district, because so much of my district is dependent on what happens in this farm bill.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The Ag Department's new farm income forecast for 2023 says the farm sector as a whole will see net cash income down from last year's record high by almost 21%. But many analysts are quick to point out
almost any year in connection to 2022 is going to look less favorable.
True. USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer told us we have to look at this new forecast not as a farm income disaster at all.
Yes, it is declining relative to last year. Yes, receipts are falling. Yes, government payments are falling. Yes, input prices continue to rise, but it's still a better than the long-run average farm income year.
Meyer says this is not a case of asking, is the cup half full or half empty?
The glass is three-quarters full. It's still a quite good year for farm income.
And he says producer margins may be squeezed, and so
we're tightening the belt here a little bit. Still got plenty of room.
And Meyer says the farm sector will make it through the year.
Still in pretty good shape.
Gary Crawford, Washington.